regular listener to the show, you might get a bit annoyed with us because Vanessa Levenstein and I are always banging on about this author, Sipiwe Glorian Ndlovu. She is without a doubt in my top five South African authors. I think she might be in Vanessa's top three South African authors. When we heard she had a new novel coming up, we were over the moon excited. Her last novel was called The Quality of Mercy, and it was one of the best novels that I read last year. She is really in a league of her own. As I said in the beginning of the show, I'm willing to bet good money that this book will absolutely make it through in the Sunday Times Literary Awards in 2025. So welcome to the show, Vanessa Levenstein, and our very favorite, Sipiwe Glorian Ndlovu. We were all fangirling big time when she came into the studio. Over to you.
The creation of Half Broken People is the fourth City of Kings novel by Sipiwe Glorian Ndlovu. Spanning over a century, the novel threads through the lives of four women. It's narrated by an anonymous woman who has visions of the misremembered, misforgotten, and forgotten women. This is a quote from the book. For is it not every man's dream someday to meet his childhood hero, to speak to a real life legend, so as to know what exactly could be made possible in a man's life? We've interviewed Sipiwe before on Book Choice, but only via Zoom. However, here she is in studio with us. So hello and welcome. You are a real life literary legend, our hero.
Oh, wow. Good morning. Thank you, Vanessa, for having me. This is an amazing opportunity to finally see you face to face and have a conversation with you face to face.
To plunge right into the book, Charlotte Bronte put a mad woman in an attic. John Race deconstructed Jane Eyre with wide sagacity. You put a mad woman in an attic and added yellow wallpaper. It feels like a conversation with writers who came before you.
Definitely. So for me, I had the, I guess, dubious privilege of having to study Jane Eyre in high school for A-levels. And I remember being very struck by the post-colonial reading of The Woman in the Attic as sort of like England and Britain trying to come to terms with their colonial past without necessarily realizing it. And obviously, Jean Rhys's White Sagacity also was a great way of thinking about that. But I also found that it was a conversation that wasn't complete if we didn't bring the African aspect of it as another place where Britain was colonizing. So what does that look like? What does that narrative look like on the continent? What is it about our past as a post-colonial settler colony that we are trying not to come to terms with? And how can we come to terms with it? So what is it about this violent past that we have to contend with?
And you do contend with it. And you also demonstrate how literature can appropriate and colonize. I mean, references to King Solomon's Mines. Does this book attempt to right the wrongs of the past, starting with the Silver Wings, the return of the Silver Wing?
Definitely. I think for me, what I love about being able to write as a black woman from an ex-settler colony is that I know for sure I was not supposed to do this, right? So this is an act of defiance on so many levels. I was never supposed to be able to engage with the past in this way. I was not supposed to be able to write back to it. And so just existing as a writer and being amongst a lot of black writers, this is an amazing thing that is happening and that we're doing. And so I feel very privileged to be able to do it because I am very much aware that when Rider Haggard wrote King Solomon's Mines and he wrote the character of Gagool, now that I'm a middle-aged woman, it's supposed to be me, right, in many ways, that he wasn't thinking that at some point some middle-aged black woman was going to write about this and try and definitely deconstruct it and look at how it had been such a damaging image to write and then also inherit as black women. And yeah, so just being able to write against that is just a powerful thing.
I love the way you say write against this because your characters also went against what was expected of them in all three novels, especially the women, and in this one as well. They don't accept what history has given them, and they do question, and that comes out throughout, and it makes the reader question about what's happened. What are your silver wings?
What are my silver wings? So for me, the idea of silver wings are these things that are entrenched in many different narratives. There's the mythological side, there's the magical, but there's also the very real material wings themselves, and that then become part of a narrative of Africa losing its artifacts, right, or having its artifacts stolen and then not returned, and the narratives around why, you know, we can't have them back because we don't know how to look after them, we don't know how to value them, so we deserve the theft that happened, we deserve not to get them back. And it's a narrative I think that a lot of people are hearing and talking about, but at the same time, it's so very much a narrative that began so long ago, and the people who are saying these things have been saying them for like 150 years without questioning their own stance on why they think it's okay to actively say we took things without permission, or, you know, we started a war and took things. And those things already belonged to a cultural context that has never been rectified. So if something was used in a ritual and you took it, what happened to that ritual after you took it, you know? And you're not necessarily thinking of that. And the truth is, a lot of these artifacts and things are not necessarily on display in museums. They're like in basements, not even being displayed. They're just something that we have. And so I don't understand how you're valuing it if it's in a basement and saying that we wouldn't know how to value it. And yet, it doesn't really matter what we did with it. It was ours for us to do with what we want. And so you really don't have any kind of argument you can make for why you still have them that makes sense.
Well, it's the appropriation, and that appropriation extends to the appropriation of women's bodies. It was shocking. And value. You bring up value a lot. And it's for us to choose how we value that which is precious to us and important. And there are also haunting references to Toni Morrison's Beloved. Mm. As a reader, I often felt as if I was punched in the stomach. There was nothing to quite prepare me for what was going to happen. Was it hard going to those places for you?
Definitely. I think I find the other novels, the novels by the women, to be not difficult, but also part of a healing process from, you know, counter-reading Jane Eyre to White Sagacity to Rebecca to all these things to Toni Morrison. I think they are part of my own coming to understand the role of women, the role of these histories of violence that have taken place and what they've done to women's bodies. I think the difficult text to really contend with was Rider Haggard's King Solomon's Mines, because there is no healing. It's just sort of like this very colonial narrative that does not question itself, that is setting very definite ways of defining womanhood and blackness that we have inherited up to today. And in some ways, we haven't come to actually start to question those, because they've just become a very natural part of how we think about, you know, sort of a woman who is very, very knowledgeable in a certain way is still seen as dangerous. And we don't think about, where did that come from? A black woman especially. Mm-hmm. So we don't think of, where did that image come from? Mm-hmm. Where did that idea come from? And it comes from these colonial texts.
So we talk about healing. I mean, the book's title is The Creation of Half-Broken People. People have been broken by oppression, poverty, abuse, or mental illnesses. Can they be fixed?
Yes.
What a lovely short answer.
I definitely believe, yes, they can. But we have to be able to have conversations that are difficult in order for that to happen.
I just want to say to the listener, we're talking about a lot of heavy topics, but if you've read any of Sipiwe's previous books, you'll know there's so much humor. There's so much irony. I mean, I laughed loud during the book. Humor, it's also a way to heal, isn't it?
Definitely. I think what I find funny about a lot of the colonial narrative is that it took itself so seriously and never anticipated its own antithesis. And I just find it so interesting that it never did, because obviously people were going to not all be on the same page about this, right? And so to come to a place and feel like you can just rule over it without any sort of resistance is already so much hubris that you have to find it funny, right? Like that people will be like, oh, it's okay for you to come and, you know, rule over us for 200 years. We'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
Of course not. No one's going to be fine with that.
And the John B. Good Foundation and John B. Good 9. Yeah. No, he's not good. I mean, your use of language, your use of names. I think one of the greatest lines that I have ever read comes from the first book. Jeannie says, "You cannot break me. You see, I know for certain that my parents were capable of flight." And that is in reference to the Silver Wings. Mm-hmm. So I suppose there is an excuse to bring it in. But why I want to bring that line in is you've got this incredible way of exploring history, deconstructing, being funny, but also internalizing what happens in a person's heart. And you give your reader strength.
Thank you.
How many more City of Kings books can we look forward to? Please, please, please say lots.
Lots. I'm hoping at least another three.
And I hope that our next conversation, we're back here in studio. Absolute privilege and an honor to speak to you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.